sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list on The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Well, hi there, and a good Sunday morning to you on this 19th day of November. It is the best of Downtown, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. And by Quirk Auto Group, QuirkAuto.com. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell here with you. Our look back at our favorite conversations of the past week. Good stuff this morning. Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal previews this afternoon's Patriots-Raiders game. We talk with Beatles biographer Mark Lewison, Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation, and actor John O'Hurley previews the upcoming National Dog Show, the Thanksgiving Day nationwide broadcast on NBC. Guests of Downtown are heard on the G&M Family Market phone line. G&M, corner of Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden, open today and every day of the week from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And you know they are the place to go for all of your Thanksgiving holiday needs. Let's get things rolling this morning and talk some football. Patriots in Mexico City to meet up with the Oakland Raiders in the late afternoon game today. We got the skinny on all of it from Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal.
Who wouldn't want to, you know, spend a week in Colorado Springs hanging out with the Patriots? It's interesting because I want to know, and I'm fascinated to see how this is all going to play out on Sunday, because the Raiders are staying at home, and I know logistics are involved in terms of, you know, how far you have to move and everything, but you know, the Raiders are staying at home, and they do have some experience at high altitude. I mean, obviously they play in Denver, you know, once a year, but I'm just fascinated to see if it's going to pay off for New England come Sunday, if, you know, the Raiders are going to wilt and, you know, fall over in the fourth quarter, or what's going to happen. So I just, you know, that's one of the reasons they play the games, I guess, but it's going to be interesting to see how all that impacts Sunday's game between these two teams.
Well, if one just looks at the raw statistics, we might assume a high scoring game because neither defense has set the world on fire. And it's hard to believe, but this is a Raiders defense that's set a fairly unique NFL record, having gone 10 games without intercepting a single pass.
Yeah, and one of the things that was interesting, I've been talking with some folks in Oakland, and the big thing about Oakland last year is their ability to kind of keep it close and force turnovers and get some of that fourth quarter magic from Derek Carr. They haven't been able to do that this year. They've only forced 6 turnovers, all of them fumbles. And as you mentioned, they haven't gotten a single pick this year. They do have some great fearsome pass rushers and guys like Mack, but really they're kind of, you know, keeping the secondary together with bubblegum and bailing wire, and I have to imagine that, you know, there are going to be plenty of opportunities for the Patriots in the passing game, even without the likes of someone like Chris Hogan and Malcolm Mitchell, to make up some serious ground against Oakland on Sunday.
And you mentioned no Chris Hogan, one of a handful of Patriots who won't be in action. Let's start there. Do we see Dorsett get more action? Who fills that void without Hogan this week?
You're going to see more of an impact. You're going to see more of a you know, the wide receiver. Not so much the wide receivers. They're always going to have a role. Guys like Amendola, you know, especially on third down, are always counted on. But the running backs and the tight ends, I think you're going to see another sizable week out of them. This is a defense that has struggled to contain tight ends and backs in the passing game, and I think when you consider the performance the last couple weeks, Gronkowski last week, Martellus Bennett caught a few passes, you know, Deion Lewis, James White, that's a huge part of what they want to get done offensively. And so, you know, while there will be wide receivers who will step into that void, I would put my money on another big week of, you know, Rex Burkhead and the rest of the backs, as well as Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett in the passing game.
Marcus Cannon is out, and we've seen very little of David Andrews this week. What will the O-line look like on Sunday?
If those guys can't go, it's going to be our guy, Steady Teddy Karras, one of the most likable guys in the Patriots locker room, the backup center who really hasn't had much of a chance to play at all this year, because the three interior linemen, he's the primary backup for the interior linemen, and the three interior linemen, the two guards, Tooney, Mason, and then Andrews, the center, those guys have gone wire to wire. They went wire to wire over the first 8 games of the season. All three played deep into last week's game against the Broncos. Andrews ended up coming out in the fourth quarter. But it's my understanding that Andrews may be suffering from a bit of altitude sickness. And so, you know, we talk about the high mountain air. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to be able to go. We're going to get the full injury report a little bit later this afternoon, but if he can go, I imagine they would go with Ted Karras as the backup center, and he would be the guy who would be asked to man the pivot for New England Sunday against the Raiders.
And no Matthew Slater, and it may be a while before we see Matthew Slater back out there from some of the reports we're hearing.
Yeah, that hamstring thing is just, it's tough because, look, you know, I'm going to take off my sports writer hat and put on my human being hat here for a second. Matthew Slater is not only a great football player in terms of what he does, he's one of the best gunners in the league, one of the fastest guys in the team, and really, in a lot of ways, the spiritual centerpiece of that locker room. He's also a great guy, and it's tough to see a guy like that, plus 30, kind of have these recurring hamstring issues, especially someone who relies so much on his speed. So, yeah, I think that he's going to be on the shelf for at least, you know, another week, maybe two here, because this is something that cropped up earlier in the season. He missed the first four games, missed a sizable portion of the summer workouts. So, when you talk about the overall impact on special teams, he's obviously not Gostkowski or Cardona or Ryan Allen, but he does play a very important role when it comes to working as a gunner.
We're talking with Christopher Price, Boston Sports Journal. You had a really terrific piece on BSJ earlier this week on the defense, and there has been improvement over the last five games. How much of that has been legitimate improvement, and how much has been, as you mentioned in the column, the fact that they haven't played big-time offenses?
Yeah, I think that the numbers are great. I really do, and they're certainly trending in the right direction. And look, if they're trending the other way, we'd kill them. So, you know, I think that's first and foremost when you talk about the improvement in the defensive numbers. At the same time, all numbers have to be put in some sort of context. And when, you know, you consider the fact the Patriots have played some not-so-great offenses over the last five games, I think probably the best offense they played was Atlanta, and they held Atlanta to 7 points. They're on a roll, though. I will say this, that the defensive issues that dogged them over the first four games, regardless of the opponent, certainly appear to have been cleaned up, whether it's communication, whether it's execution, whether it's getting guys in certain situations, new faces in certain situations to be able to play well as part of the overall unit, whatever the case may be. Guys like Stephon Gilmore have played well, Jonathan Jones, Johnson Batamosi, you've seen improvement across the board with those types of guys, and I think that plays a large role into their success, or has played a large role in their overall success over the last 5 weeks.
Tom Brady looked so good in the Denver game, and now I'm thinking, you know, with a week of high altitude conditions, is it possible he'll just levitate on Sunday?
I don't know if that's part of the TB12 diet plan, though. I don't
know. All that water may weigh him down a little bit.
Exactly. All the water, all the avocado ice cream may weigh him down. But look, I think that the other thing, and I think this is important to note going into this game, Brady, when he's faced a Jack Del Rio-led defense, and Del Rio is either the defensive coordinator or the head coach, he's won 8 of those 9 games, and he's put up phenomenal numbers over the course of his career when going up against the Jack Del Rio defense. So, regardless of who is on the other side of the ball, regardless of the altitude, regardless of the venue, it's usually a pretty safe bet that when he goes up against Del Rio, he's going to end up one-upping him.
Burkhead with a nice game last week. Deion Lewis continues to play well. Who would you say this Sunday is likely to be the most valuable offensive player not named Tom Brady?
I think it's going to be Gronkowski. I do, although that's kind of a default answer because he's probably number two behind Brady, but when you consider their struggles when it comes to slowing tight ends, I think this certainly sets up to be a really good opportunity for him to put up some big numbers. But also too, like we mentioned before, whether it's Burkhead, whether it's Deion Lewis, whether it's James White, they've gotten some really good performances out of the backs, and I think that that's going to be the case again this Sunday in Oakland, or in Mexico City, I should say.
And boy, on the defensive side of things, and you wrote about the Iron Men this week, Devin McCourty, is he going to take a play off this year?
I think he's taken one right now so far. It was funny, I was joking with him about that a couple of weeks ago, and he says, yeah, when you play safe, it's not like playing linebacker or playing, defensive line or something. It's completely, you're back there, you don't really have a whole lot of contact. So we kind of, and he said, I should be playing that much. If I'm healthy, I'm ready to go, I should be playing that much. So, look, McCourty is so important to what they want to get done defensively in terms of, guiding everyone and making sure everyone's where they need to be, especially after Hightower went down. That's a guy who's really, you never want to label it, his defense. But I think he is as close as you can be to a defensive leader on that side of the ball at this stage of the season.
Chris Price, always great talking with you. And I will say this while you're here. Once we get to Thanksgiving week, okay, I'm ready for Christmas. I don't want to hear Christmas music until after Thursday. And I don't usually want to start thinking about Christmas shopping, but I will amend that with you here to say I can't think of better gifts you could get for the football fan in your family than, or the sports fan in your family, than to get a subscription to Boston Sports Journal and then to get yourself a copy of your book, Drive for Five, The Remarkable Run of the 2016 Patriots.
I appreciate that, Rich. I really do. It's selling very well to this point. You know, we want to keep the momentum going forward for the sales of the book and subscription to the site. We're hopefully, as it stands right now, we're right on the cusp of 6,000 subscribers. The goal is to get to 10,000 within the first year. We started in July, so we've got a really good head start on things.
Well, it's always quality content all around. Great group of writers on board, and we always love having you in the show talking Patriots. Thanks, Chris, and I hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving as well.
You too, Rich. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal previewing this afternoon's Patriots-Raiders game here on the Best of Downtown. When we come back, we go to London and talk Beatles with the world's foremost expert on the group, biographer Mark Lewison, next on the Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's three times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Biking season is here, and the only way to be sure that you're road or trail ready is to bring your bike to Slipping Gears Cycling, Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. At 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, before prime riding season slips away. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates, shop in person and online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea.
Our next guest on the Best of Downtown has probably written more about the Beatles than anyone. The first volume of what will be a three-part Beatles series, 900 pages. All these years, tune in, Volume 1. That's not enough for Mark Lewison, who now has released an extended special edition of that volume. 1,700 pages that only gets up to 1962. Much more to go in his extensive and heavily researched work on the Beatles. We talked about that recently when Mark joined us from his home in London. What kind of details might we look for as we read even more from the early years of the Beatles?
Well, that's a good question. The book is, I originally wrote this book with 780,000 words, which is a hell of a lot of words. And I had to trim it down for the mass market edition. So the book that most people have is actually a bridge. They may not have realized it because it was done quite deftly, but it is actually abridged. So now the full Everything I Wrote edition is going to be fully available in the States for the first time. And it just has more levels and layers of context and color, more about their family backgrounds, more about their childhoods and teenage years, more about rock and roll and rhythm and blues and the music they were listening to. more about the music business, more about Brian Epstein and George Martin in particular. That's the Beatles manager and the Beatles producer, of course. So just more of everything. I mean, the real challenge for me was getting that down to about half the size for the abridged edition. But I managed to do it in such a way that it left no gaps. But when you see this book, the full edition, then you will realize that actually quite a lot of it was cut out.
There have been so many books written about the Beatles, but you've said before, and I would agree, there's never been until this volume a truly comprehensive biography of the band that really looks at it from several different perspectives. Why was it important for you to tell this story and to tell it in such an incredibly thorough way?
Well, the earliest biography of the Beatles came out in 1968 by Hunter Davis. That's the authorized book. And in its time, it was a seminal work. And that's now almost 50 years ago, 50 years next year. There haven't been that many biographies of the Beatles since then. There have been maybe a handful. Most books on the Beatles are other kinds of books, books that look at their records or their photographs or their art or whatever it might be. But in terms of biographical work, and in particular, as I see it, in terms of writing the Beatles as a history, it's really not been done, certainly not to the extent that I always believed it ought to be done. I said that the Hunter Davis book is 50 years old. That is proof, if any were needed, that the Beatles are still extremely important. We recognize now more than ever before their contribution to our culture, and we revere them as much now, if not before, for the extraordinary qualities in their work and in their personalities and so on. They really were responsible for making pop music, rock music, whatever you want to call it, for actually beginning its maturity from its earliest days when it was just this kind of teenage thing. The Beatles, in a sense, helped elevate it to the, I hesitate to call it art form, but it is. It is exactly what it actually is. So they are worthy of proper study, and it's important, in my view, that the history is actually got right while it's still possible to do it. Because if it's not got right now, it will very likely be wrong forever. And I don't want to go to my grave knowing I could have done something about it but didn't. So this is my chance to try to ensure that we appreciate the Beatles in the future, long after we're all gone, for the best of reasons, and that anybody studying them actually gets it right.
Now, is it true that George Harrison once, I guess, confronted, maybe too strong a word, but challenged you because you weren't present and perhaps couldn't offer an accurate history simply because you were not there?
Yes, he did. He did. He said it to my face, and then he said it in another circumstance that was actually meaning me, but looking across the room at me. he did say that. That was his view. You weren't there, so how could you know? Or you weren't there, how could you know? And that's my impression.
It was very good.
Thank you. The thing is, if biography was only written by people who were actually witness to events, there would barely be any biographies on the shelf. There is a role for biographers, and certainly for historians, to look at a subject as thoroughly as possible, to use every possible piece of information or eyewitness to get it right. But there is always that worry, and George was correct to point it out, there is always the worry that if someone who wasn't present writes about events, and they may not be getting it entirely right, but I am doing all that I can. I'm spending 30 years on this trilogy of books to get it as right as possible. And that comes on top of many previous years of doing research. So though I respect and understand George's position, I think I'm actually honoring the Beatles and honoring his memory by doing all I can to ensure that anyone who's trying to study his life and his work actually does have a chance to get it more right than usual. So if George is listening from wherever he might be now, then that's my message.
We're talking with Mark Lewison, a Beatles biographer, the author of All These Years, Volume 1, Tune In. And one of the many things I learned from Volume 1 is that much of what we think we know about the Beatles are stories that have been told and retold, but may not be accurate. And I've heard you say in interviews before that you did not set out to debunk any myths, but the meticulous research has revealed some things. And one of them is the story of the Beatles coming together with George Martin, perhaps not being what we've heard. Could you talk about that and the role of a man by the name of Kim Bennett?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, you see, the Beatles story has been told very, very often. People think they know it, but actually they don't know it because things got either intentionally or unintentionally sewn into the fabric of this story a very long time ago. And all they've done, all the books that have been published since have done, is actually cement those things further and further into truth. But they're not true. I wasn't trying, as you just said, to set out and disprove myths, but merely by getting the story as right as possible and researching it much better than it's, or deeper than it's been researched before, the myths do tend to fall away. In the case of the Beatles getting their all-important record contract, if this hadn't have happened, we wouldn't know who they were. If they hadn't have started to make records, we wouldn't be talking about them now. That all happened really as a result of George Martin being assigned the Beatles. For various reasons, which I do go into in complete thoroughness in the book, he was kind of told to give them a recording contract by a more senior level of management within EMI Records in London for whom he was working. So he didn't sign them thinking they were great. He actually signed them without even meeting them. But the beauty of the fact that this was George Martin and they were the Beatles is that when he met them, he recognized straight away that actually these people were going to be interesting to work with. They had not so much at that point their music that impressed him, but their personalities and their sense of humor and their unconventionality, if there is such a word. It's so easy now to forget, but before the Beatles, there wasn't really anybody else like the Beatles. There were very few, if any, three rock bands with three guitars and drums, and three of them at the front line singing, and in particular, two of them writing the songs. This just was simply not done. It became the way that it would always be done, but at that time, it wasn't done. It was the Beatles who created that. So when George Martin met them, he recognized straight away that they weren't usual. They were unusual. They were different from the rest. And within months of meeting them or having been assigned to meet them and to sign them, he realized that they were unlike anybody else, and they recorded what would be their first number one single, Please Please Me. They gelled immediately. He was the right man for them, and they were the right group for him. But initially, it was extraordinary piece of luck that they fell into each other's arms.
And in many ways, Mark, also an extraordinary piece of luck that they made it to the point where they could take both the United Kingdom and the United States by storm, because I was surprised to learn that along the way, there were some times, well, they did break up on a couple of occasions, and there were ample opportunities for the whole thing to dissolve.
There were. I mean, the Beatles always had this thing about something will turn up, but there were moments along the way when it really didn't look like they would have any kind of breakthrough. And also the Beatles themselves, the restlessness that they always had within their artistry, if you like, which is one of the things that propelled the extraordinarily fast progression of their musical sound once they were making records. That restlessness was always there. So they were never going to do anything for any one time. People say, when did the Beatles begin to break up? And it sounds like a kind of smart-ass answer, but my answer is really that they began to break up the moment they got together, because those guys were never going to do any one thing forever, because it was within their DNA that they always wanted to move on and keep trying something else. And eventually that would encourage them to be doing different things entirely. Now, I realize I didn't answer the previous bit of your question about a man called Kim Bennett. So I will just quickly go back and add the fact that Kim Bennett was a man in London about whom no one really, apart from readers of this book, will have any idea of who he was. He has now died, but I had the privilege of interviewing him about 12 years ago now for this book. And he was the one man in London who believed in the Beatles when nobody else was. He was their first believer. Actually, he was just one of those doggy personalities who worked in the music publishing business. And it was through his perseverance that A, the Beatles got their contract with George Martin, and B, that their first record, Love Me Do, got into the charts and stayed there, because he was the one who kind of made sure that it got some radio airplay and things like that. He went to extraordinary lengths. The Beatles never met him. I don't think, unless they've read this book, I don't think they've even heard of him. And nor is anybody else who thinks they know the Beatles until they read this book, because without Kim Bennett, as so often happens, he was the cog in the chain. And if you remove him from the chain, then the whole thing falls apart.
You've said in the past that Volume 1 is very much a Liverpool story. How much impact did that upbringing in post-war Liverpool have, obviously on the guys as individuals, but on the band and its approach to music?
It was very significant. The Beatles were all war babies, and war in Liverpool was devastating, because it was a target for the Luftwaffe bombers from Germany. They tried actually to obliterate Liverpool off the map. It was one of the most important ports and docks in the British Empire, and it was a major target for them. And so, although the four Beatles, as war babies, lived to see peace, the city as a whole, the one that they grew up in, was devastated. It was like it was a war zone. And they grew up in amid rationing and bomb sites everywhere, and a lot of poverty. The Beatles themselves were not particularly from poor families, but no one there had much money. And it shaped the character of the people in that city, but it didn't quench it. And in fact, it made them very resilient. And Liverpool has always been a musical city. It is to this day, principally because of its strong Irish heritage. And the Beatles themselves, three of them of the four, have Irish backgrounds. And they grew up in a musical city, and it happened to be, once the late 50s rolled around, the only place in the world, and I mean the world, even including America, that had a real thriving rock and roll scene, with live groups playing every night in different halls and different ballrooms and so on. It's sufficient eventually for the place to have its own music paper called Merseybeat. No one else was paying any attention to what was going on there, but within Liverpool, there was a lot of competition, and the Beatles had competition, but very quickly rose to the top. As soon as they had their first trip to Hamburg in Germany and came back to Liverpool, they were the best. And they reached the top in Liverpool pretty quickly after that, but then hit the ceiling and couldn't really go anywhere else until they got Brian Epstein as their manager. And he was the one who got them out of Liverpool and into London, and then into the whole of the UK, and then eventually, of course, the world.
Well, Volume 1 gets us through 1962. I know the research has been going on for years and years into the rest of the story. Do you have a target date for Volume 2?
I've got a target date. I mean, people often ask me when the next book is coming out, and I always say, which is true, that I'm aiming for 2020. However, I'm not sure that I'm going to hit it. It's still my aim, but it's looming large now, being that we're coming close to 2018. I have a feeling I'm not going to get it out in 2020, but I'm not dragging my heels on this, because after Volume 2, I've then got Volume 3 to write. And I think it's looking likely that by the time this project is completely done, I will have spent the best part of 30 years on it. And it is all I do. I have nothing else to do. It is my job. And I'm privileged to be the one who is spending pretty much a life writing about the Beatles. But I'd like to get it finished and get it out, so no one should think I'm just dragging my heels. But it is a massive task. It really is an absolutely massive task, and I'm still pretty much functioning alone, and I do all my own research and all my own writing. And it's a multifaceted book, because in essence, the three books together are like a very comprehensive history of the 1960s, and not just in Liverpool, not just in London or even Britain, but America too, and indeed the rest of the world. So It's a complex book to write, but I'm not complaining about that, but it is taking time.
Well, I absolutely devoured Volume 1. I look forward to all 1,728 pages of the expanded, extended special edition. And I thank you so much for your work and your passion for this project, which has been so wonderful for all of us who love the music and who love the individuals involved. And thanks so much as well for spending time with us today.
That's a pleasure. You have delayed the next book by about 20 minutes, but I won't hold it against you.
All right. Others can blame us for that, but we're happy to do it. Thank you again, Mark.
Thank you.
That's Mark Lewison talking Beatles with us here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, football at Fenway Park, a crazy experiment, but an awesome one as well. Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation coming up next on The Pulse, WZON.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Penobscot Theater presents
Who's in My Castle?
A tale as old as time.
There's a stranger here.
This holiday season, be our guest for Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't mean to scare you.
December 7th through the 30th at Bangor's Enchanted Opera House.
Don't you recognize the beast within the man?
942-3333 or penobscottheater.org.
Green Acres Kennel Shop has been your locally owned, full-service pet care leader since 1965, providing pet-friendly boarding and daycare, grooming, training classes, behavioral consultations, and quality pet food and supplies. Pets and pet lovers agree, Green Acres Kennel Shop is Bangor region's best. That's why Green Acres has been voted best kennel for the 16th consecutive year and voted best pet store for the 11th year in a row, best dog trainer for the 7th consecutive year, and best pet groomer for the 5th year in a row. It's no wonder Green Acres has also been recognized by Best Businesses of America as one of the top 15 kennels in New England. You can trust your pets are in great hands at Green Acres. Their longtime, compassionate, caring, and knowledgeable staff are ready to help you. You can learn more about Green Acres Kennel Shop at greenacreskennel.com. Or better yet, stop by and see them at 1653 Union Street in Bangor.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
Fenway Park, of course, known for baseball, but over the years has been home to all kinds of events, concerts, hurling, and football, actually since its very first year. But there had been quite a hiatus until last year when college football returned. And this year, the Fenway Gridiron Series included the Maine Black Bears playing the University of Massachusetts last weekend. Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation was there and not only wrote about it, but talked about the experience with us this week on Downtown.
Hi, Rich. How are you doing?
I am just fantastic. And by the way, the second woman on the show just in this hour.
Oh, I love that. Did you see my tweet?
I did see your tweet, yes.
See, that's wonderful because for people listening who don't follow my stupid Twitter, I was saying how it's very rare that in the sports world I'm invited on a broadcast or a podcast that has two women on at the same time, and so I'm thrilled to hear that this is different.
Well, you know this is different.
mostly you're one of the good ones, Rich.
Well, no, because we have no idea what we're doing, so that makes it a little different, too.
Same.
It's working so far. You were down at Fenway Park for what was a very, very interesting weekend, and you wrote about it today, a terrific piece on SB Nation. The fact that this whole idea of football at Fenway makes no sense. It's a complete money grab, and yet it still found a way to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know, thank you for saying those kind words. I appreciate it. I think I had no idea what to expect. You know, the reason that I went to that, I said to my editors, you know, having grown up in Boston and in Maine and having family in both places, I saw that UMass and UMaine were playing at Fenway, and it was kind of as though someone had built you know, an event perfect for me. So I really wanted to go. And then once I went, I had no idea what to expect, but I found this sort of weird, you know, seeing Fenway as a football stadium is absolutely bizarre and didn't make any sense. And no one was there and it was freezing. And for some reason, I just had the absolute time of my life. So
now you were there.
I tried to write that.
You were there for that Friday night game. We were just coming into town then. And I nearly froze to death walking from my car to the hotel. You made it through a half of that Dartmouth game against Brown?
Yeah, it was brutal. Oh my God. I did. I left. I have to admit, I left halfway through. I did enjoy it. You know, I think Ivy League football is sort of its own special specimen in the college football world, obviously. But I since I lived in Boston for 4 years after college, and I haven't been there for two now, but I still have my favorite bars. And I went to my favorite bar where the guy who works the door is we became good friends and I lived there, and his name is Paul. So he and I watched the end of the Celtics game together at the bar I always used to go to, which felt kind of appropriate for a story about being home.
Yeah, that was great. And then Saturday you were there for the Maine-Massachusetts game. That was a blast. You got to talk with Maine's offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, and the guy who is likely going to be a first-team All-American in FCS football, running back Josh Mack.
He was incredible. Oh, my God. I mean, I love talking to Liam, too, and I think that our listeners need to know you introduced me, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
But, no, I was really intrigued by, you know, when I talked to Liam before I talked to Josh, and I said, you know, what's your strategy for this game? And he is like, well, we are going to run the ball. You know, UMass plays man coverage. We're more of a spread. And so I was like, okay, cool. And then I talked to Josh, and he was such a sweet kid. I really, really liked him. But then when I was watching the game, every single play, it felt like he had the ball. And I was like, wow, Liam is really doing what he said he was going to do. Like, this guy is, I felt like every play it was, and Mac has the ball. So that was kind of cool to see that executed.
And then you and I were standing down there on the field in pregame, and, well, along comes Victor Cruz.
I know. It was so funny, Rich, because I was there on, you know, the Brown game. Chris Berman was on the sidelines, so I was chatting with Chris Berman, and then, you know, the next day Victor Cruz is there, and I was like, I was not expecting so many people who are, you know, fairly well known in the NFL world to be at a Brown Dartmouth and then UMass game, but I really loved it.
And it's interesting, too, because there is an indifference, I guess you could say, to college football. It's not high on the radar screens here in New England. And for some reason, to me, that just makes it more endearing.
I totally agree with you. I could not agree more. You know, it was so being there and seeing these mostly people in the stands either knew the players or were their families, especially because it was so cold. I could see if this is a beautiful, warmer fall day, that would be a really fun thing to go to as a casual fan, or even as someone who doesn't care about college football in New England, as many people don't. But the weather really weeded them out, I have to tell you. And it kind of presented this more true version of how an area that has such good professional sports teams and cares so much doesn't really have any one community in terms of a school to rally around. And so it's very disparate, I think.
We're talking with Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation. Make sure you read her piece on the Fenway Gridiron series. It is absolutely fantastic. All right, now, Charlotte, you know, we respect your work. Love having you on the show. You're one of our favorite guests. But I wonder if we need to do an intervention of some kind when I see out here on the Twitterverse that you ate tortilla chips with peanut butter.
Yeah, okay. So everyone has been really concerned about me after I tweeted that last night I had tortilla chips and peanut butter for dinner, which I thought was more funny, but now I'm realizing probably comes across as more sad than anything else. But I had gone out to have drinks with one of my best friends, and then I came home. I had like one glass of wine, so I think people either thought I was like very drunk, or I wasn't. I was lazy, and I was too impatient and hungry to wait to order food, and all I had in my cabinet was tortilla chips and peanut butter. And I was like, well, let's give this a try. And then it actually wasn't that bad. So, but, you know, sometimes you just got to work with what you have.
Together? You ate them like peanut butter in the tortilla chip?
Yeah, I was dipping the tortilla chips in the peanut butter.
You are out there in the culinary front lines, Charlotte. We appreciate
Listen,
that.
I did work at a food magazine for 2 years, so if that gives me any street cred, either that or, you know, they'll completely disown that I ever worked there. So maybe I should keep that one a little bit quieter than I have been.
Well, we'll let the tortilla chips fall where they may when it comes to that.
Yeah. No,
I know. I hate myself. I hate myself for saying that. Yeah, yeah.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You are speaking my language.
Thanksgiving is coming up, of course. Is that a big holiday in the Wilder family?
It is. My uncle and my cousin, actually, my uncle owns a cheese shop and my cousin works with him there. So we have the most incredible spread of cheeses and charcuterie before, which is a problem when you're already gearing up for a very big meal to eat your weight in cheese and meat. But I think it's totally worth it. And we'll be in Massachusetts. And usually we go up to Maine after, but I don't think that's in the cards this time, sadly.
Well, you have a wonderful holiday. It was an absolute delight to see you down at Fenway. And thanks, as always, for coming on the show with us.
Oh, you too, Rich. You guys are my favorite. Anytime.
Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation here on The Best of Downtown. We come back, one of the most recognizable voices in the entertainment world and one of our favorites on the show, actor John O'Hurley, talks the dogs of Thanksgiving next on The Best of Downtown.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Whatever you're looking for, G&M Family Market has got what you need. They're on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. They have fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, a Dunkin' Donuts right there, and an Amato's as well. And if there's something you can't find, just ask, and they'll make every effort to get it for you next time. It's G&M Family Market, Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. They're open every day from 6 in the morning until 9 p.m.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
Polaris is now at Friend and Friend in Orono. Polaris side-by-sides, Polaris Rangers, Polaris Razors, Polaris ATVs, Polaris snowmobiles. The Polaris factory authorized clearance is going on now, with massive rebates up to $2,500 on non-currents, making now the time to buy. On-the-spot financing. Get your off-road vehicle today at Friend and Friend Polaris in Orono. Easy on, easy off. Exit 193 on I-95, just 5 minutes from Hogan Road. Polaris at Friend and Friend in Orono, now. I'm next on Downtown. One of our best friends on the show. Several appearances a year with us, and always this time of year we have John O'Hurley on to talk about what's become a great holiday tradition, Thanksgiving Day noontime broadcast of the National Dog Show, presented by Purina on the NBC television network. I have a message for you. Stephen Tobolowsky was in town, and I brought you up, and he had nothing but good things to say with you. He said that you had bought him some bottles of wine, and also said that you may be an expert on more subjects than any man he's ever met.
Well, that's interesting. Actually, all I have is cocktail party knowledge on pretty much every subject, which means I can go. I'm about two sentences deep, and that's got. Then we got to change subject.
Well, I know when it comes to a Thanksgiving Day. You know your stuff. The National Dog Show, presented by Purina, back for another year, broadcast nationwide on NBC. It's become such a wonderful Thanksgiving tradition. And I have to say, we've talked with you about this before. Few programs feel as family-oriented these days as this show does. It's such a wonderful event for people of all ages and really does bring the family together.
Well, thank you for saying that, because actually that's very true. I always maintain that the show is, if you're 4 or 94, there's something for you there. And you can't say that about too many of our programs today. And that's the wonderful thing about it. It's a wonderful piece of program that fits nicely in that slot between the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and, of course, all the football that follows at 2 o'clock. So it's a nice little it's a nice little thing that all of America can watch.
You and David Fry have such great chemistry together. And I know it's a lot of work, but it does... It sure looks like you're having fun in the midst of the work that you put in.
Well, David and I have been, we introduced to each other 16 years ago when we started this. And, not only are we, we're good co-workers, we're good co-hosts, but we're also very good friends. We have a very deep relationship. I count him as one of the great people I've ever met, and he's certainly introduced me and educated me in the world of dogs.
John, speaking of dogs, obviously they are the center of attention, the star attraction. But are there moments that don't necessarily make it into the broadcast that make you wonder if some of those dogs aren't exactly ready for prime time?
There are. Every now and then we have a dog will get loose from its handler and just start to take a circle around the ring. Now it's probably. If there's a mortal sin in the world of dog shows, that's it. So it's tremendously embarrassing for the handler. It kind of disqualifies the dog from any further consideration. But it does happen from time to time. We also do have the hazmat accidents there. I think by the NBC booth one time as he was sauntering around the ring in the best in show category and. The Great Dane stops right in front of the NBC booth, looks me straight in the eye, squats down, and leaves a pile that will look like an elephant had just come.
Well, one of the great things about this show, the Kennel Club of Philadelphia, is the opportunity for fans to get the meet to the dogs and to talk with the handlers as well.
That's the best part about this. This is one of the last remaining benched shows in America. A benched show means that the owners, the handlers, the breeders, everybody who's there, and the dogs themselves have to remain during the run of the show, which starts in the morning about 7:30 and goes until about 7 o'clock at night. So it's a long day, but it gives the tens of thousands of people that are there at the Kennel Club of Philadelphia there a chance to run up and down the aisles, talk with everybody. If you're looking for a particular dog, it's a wonderful interactive experience with the breeders because they can tell you what to look for in terms of lifestyle arrangements for certain breeds. And you end up being able to, if you're looking for a dog, it's a wonderful educational experience to find the dog that's right for you. And remember, we have nearly 200 breeds there, 2,000 of the best dogs in the country.
John, with that education in mind and learning so much about the animals over the course of your years on the program, have you developed a new affinity for or appreciation for any particular breed that you wouldn't have thought was in your wheelhouse prior to your participation?
Well, not a dog. I mean, certainly we have we've latched on to several breeds, and we have it introduced me to, over the 16 years, it's introduced me to the Cavalier King Charles, which we have one at home, little Sadie May, and also to the Havanese, which we have one as well, little Lucy. We also have a little rescue dog that we picked up this year as well. That's kind of like a little Norwich Terrier. She's kind of a rust-colored Toto-looking dog, but is very, very sweet. But it's introduced us to those breeds. But I'll tell you, the one breed that I really love, and it's not a dog that's correct for our lifestyle, but I love the Irish Setter. And the Irish Setter saunters into the ring with the, it's a very erect dog, and the auburn hair just flows with their cut. And I tell you, it looks like the redhead that just walked into the cocktail party.
We're talking with John O'Hurley here on Downtown. Will there be some new breeds in the competition this year?
This year, you know, we have one new breed that the AKC has brought in this year. Unfortunately, it will not be showing with us in this show. It will be showing later in the year when we do the Beverly Hills Dog Show, which is the brand new show that we do that airs on Easter Sunday. So we will have that. It's a little Dutch Spaniel that has a name that is almost unpronounceable. But it between now and Easter Sunday, I have plenty of time to learn how to pronounce it.
John, we talked with you earlier this year about your film, and it's out now and getting wonderful reviews. Swing Away, people seem to love this movie and your role in it, but also the message, and a great one for these times, about female empowerment.
Well, and it's a wonderful film about going back, and this is an LPGA pro that has a meltdown, and she disgraces herself on the final green of a major championship, and she's suspended. And so she goes back to her homeland in Greece with her grandparents and rediscovers not only the depth of her heritage, but some extraordinary things inside of her that allow her to mentor a 10-year-old girl who's a golf phenom and championship the town when they're trying to save property from an evil American developer, which is yours truly. But it's a wonderful story about redemption and renewal, and that you know, we are not our circumstances. So it's a wonderful message in the film, and it seems to resonate with everyone who sees it.
John, given what might be some perceived similarities between your character, as mentioned, and our current president, do you find it difficult to play that role and remain respectful to the office?
Well, Donald, our president, is a dear friend of mine, and I've known him for 25 years, but I've known him as a businessman, and he is a type A personality. He's a bull in a china shop, and he actually, the character in this movie goes into the culture of the Isle of Rhodes there, buys the golf course, and has no concern for anything other than the deal. And, you know, Donald had a little bit of that when he ventured over into the British Isles and redid a course over there. Now, to his credit, it's one of the prettiest courses in all of Ireland, but it came at a cost. He ended up, distancing himself from a lot of the local people there. But I definitely channeled his character when I created the role of this kind of ugly American developer.
John, you're always so very busy. What other projects have you got in the works in the coming months?
Well, actually, as soon as I finished the dog show, I head to Houston. I'm doing a special British Panto production of Sleeping Beauty down there. I'm taking some of the kids from the Disney shows, and we're going to bring them down there, and we're going to do a wonderful production for all of the kids and the first responder families of the kids that were affected by the hurricane in Houston. I'll be there from December to Christmas Eve. And it's a little payback for them, just to say thank you for what you've endured, and also the hard work that you have put in trying to reclaim the Houston area, because they have lost their theater down there. So we'll be there at the Hobby Center, and it'll be a wonderful time of year for them. I also have my my one-man show that I continue to tour around the country called A Man with Standards. And then I am heading off in May to shoot another film in all places, Greece again. It's my second film in Greece.
Well played, sir. Well played indeed. When, and you've talked about this before, that, that people have the choice between leading an ordinary life or an extraordinary life. How do we make that clear choice as individuals?
Well, thanks, Rich, for bringing that up. That really is kind of my premise in life, is that I like to talk about that and challenge people to live what I refer to as the extraordinary life. And I have three simple elements that the first is that you live by your imagination, not by your rational mind, because your imagination can't lie to you, and it always will lead you in the direction that you're supposed to go to. The second principle is to live by stillness, by contemplation, as I call it. So it's just living in the present moment and not concerning yourself with the expectations of the future and not dwelling on the shame of the past. So you live in the present moment, and that allows you to experience the wonder of what's going on every second of the day. And finally, the last element of the extraordinary life is appreciation, and that is recognizing the inherent value and the inherent vulnerability in every human being. You'll see it as a little baby. You know, little babies are inherently vulnerable and they're inherently valuable. But somehow we lose that respect for the people as they get older and older and older. And yet that same vulnerability and value is still present in every one of us walking the earth.
Wonderful advice right there, John. Always a delight for us to talk with you. Thanks, as always, for making time for us. And we all look forward to spending part of our Thanksgiving with you, the National Dog Show, presented by Purina at noon, nationwide, on the NBC Network.
Always a joy to talk to you, Rich. Thank you.
That's John O'Hurley, who chatted with Don Cookson and I this week about the upcoming Thanksgiving Day broadcast of the National Dog Show. Thanks to John for being on the Best of Downtown, also to Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation, Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal, and Beatles biographer Mark Lewison. That's going to do it for us. And we'd be remiss before we go, though, Carrie, not to mention one more time what a wonderful event it was the other night, and what a great time we had getting to meet in person Stephen Tobolowsky and his wife Anne, who were just absolutely wonderful people.
Yeah, that was great being able to spend a little time with them, talk with them, and they're eager to come back, not just to Maine, but to the Bangor area of Maine. They really enjoyed the short time they had here and are looking forward to making a return.
Yeah, that was a blast, and it was a great event. Yeah, you were down at the Portland event too, and it was a wonderful event, but geez, we had a bigger turnout up here in our little gig.
Yeah, I think they were very, very happy with the audience there as well, but ours was a bit larger, even with the smaller demo to draw from.
Yeah, so now we got to plan for another downtown event.
I think so.
After the holidays.
Probably for the best.
Maybe after the big snows are over.
Again, probably for the best.
Hey, tomorrow afternoon on the program, I'll be out, parent-teacher conference time. Believe me, I wish I would be here. Bruce will be filling in along with Carrie, but a great lineup. Maine football coach Joe Harris-Simiak, Dick Crapo, expert on sports and media, Mike Lowe, the Portland Press Herald, Alan Adams from the Maine Edge with movie reviews, and a talented young writer, Jonah Paris, will visit as well tomorrow afternoon. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, whatever you're doing. If you'd like to lend a hand, my wife and I will be packing up boxes at the house. You're free to come join us in that endeavor. Books galore, Carrie, if you want to clean out the shelves and get first dibs.
Well, I may have to come take a look.
All right. Otherwise, we'll catch you tomorrow on Downtown, 4 o'clock, right here on the Pulse, AM 620 WZON. You're going to be all right.